Hi there. Welcome back to 45 Not Out, the podcast for sassy career women aged 45 and over. This time, episode 13, I'm looking at fitness, and in particular, what us over 45 should and shouldn't be doing. Now, sad to say, I'm a bit of a gym bunny myself, mainly the pool. I don't do much weights or anything else. And during lockdown, I'm doing stuff. I'm doing a daily walk for about 30 to 45 minutes. And Strava tells me that I'm covering about 3K. And then under normal circumstances, when the pools are open, I'm swimming about three times a week for 30 minutes. But it crossed my mind while I'm doing all this, am I doing the right thing given that where I am at this stage in life? And it's for that reason I've pulled in the amazing Laura Walker. Laura's a fitness practitioner and she specialises in working with women in midlife and this age group. Laura is great, very experienced at knowing what we should and shouldn't be doing, and in some cases working with clients and some students who are suffering from diseases that become apparent at this stage of life, for example, type 2 diabetes, arthritis. And during the episode, Laura gives advice on that, what you should and shouldn't be doing. She gives a little bit of advice on diet, and it's like having a bit of a consultation with her for free. So lap that up, ladies. Now, on another issue, and if you'll bear with me for a minute or two, in January, I'll have had the podcast for 12 months. When I first did very tentatively my first trailer, I never thought for 1 minute that I'd be still going at episode 13 and would complete a full year. One of the biggest things that's happened, and this is the whole reason why I set up the podcast, the community that's forming of women who think like me, have had the same experience as me, or if not women that sort of are coming in and wanting to know how it is at this stage in life. Either way, you're all amazing and you're all extremely welcome, and I'd love to connect more with you. And for this reason, you'll find a 45 Not Out Facebook account, an Instagram account and a Twitter account, all under 45 Not Out. So please connect with me. It'd be lovely to hear from you. What's going on in your lives? What are you facing? And are there any issues that you'd love us to cover next year? Because listen with me, ladies, next year, I've been so inspired this year that I intend to really go for it next year and bring you what you want and to work on that community. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox and I'll let you listen to Laura and her words of wisdom. Hi there. Welcome to 45 Not Out. We've got Laura Walker this time. Welcome, Laura. Laura's an actual practitioner who provides fitness to manage health and well-being. So welcome, Laura. Thank you for taking the time out.
Thank you very much for having me. And it's a pleasure.
Not a problem at all. Now, all things exercise, Laura.
Yes.
I would imagine within the people that are listening to this, there's probably women and men come to that who have maybe dropped in and out of exercise during the course of their life, loving it, hating it, whatever. Just where we are in mid and later life, I'm just wondering, Laura, is it non-negotiable? And what are the outcomes of not doing any exercise as we age?
So non-negotiable seems quite frightening to me. And I'm not sure I would use that word. However, what I can say is that exercise will reduce the rate at which the body ages. And so we're quite lucky at the moment, as a generation potentially in the 40s, 50s and 60s, we have another generation to observe and see how the body will react as it ages. And that's potentially something that no other generation has seen quite so well. And as a result of which, we can take ownership of that right now through exercise. So if we know that exercising is going to be a way at which the body will slow down the aging process, and we are less likely to have that weakness of muscle, the falling, the fracturing, things like that, then it kind of becomes a, well, why wouldn't you do it if you know that's ahead of you? So rather than it be not negotiable, I would try and say that it would be beneficial to you. And I think most importantly, above anything else, you find an exercise that you enjoy, because as long as you enjoy it, you will stick with it. If you're trying to do something for another reason, i.e. if you're trying to go jogging because you want to lose weight, that's not a reason to be jogging or to be exercising. The reason to be exercising is enjoyment. And if you can find that class, whether it's a dance class, whether it's a strength training class, whether it's a friend to go walking with, as long as you're happy with it, you will maintain it and it will carry on. So it then becomes non-negotiable because you enjoy it.
Fab message, Laura. So basically you're looking for some form of exercise that adds to your life and enriches it, not something that you dread and have to force yourself into doing.
Definitely. We all understand that exercise is really good for us and it's beneficial to health. We all know that and we all want to do it. But then we have this, do I really want to go to the gym? I think many people might think, I've got to lose some weight before I go to the gym. That was me, you know. Yeah, absolutely, because everybody's so beautiful there that that's not me. And so you know, if that's the kind of thoughts that you're having already, the gym's not the place for you. But there are many places that are there for you. It's about finding that right one, whether it's the right instructor, the right dance teacher, the right friend to go walking with. It's really important that you, as you say, enrich your life with exercise.
Fabulous. Great message. And I love that you've said it puts back the aging process.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'll be on the treadmill every single day. No. No, I won't. Treadmill doesn't work for me at all. Just sort of going on to that, you said, I mean, you've practically answered this, Laura. You said the key is to find an exercise that fits with you and sort of enriches everything. But if, say, going back to the 80s and 90s when aerobics and cardio was very much the thing, and that's what you've carried on to do, should we continue with that, or do we risk doing ourselves a bit of damage if we continue to exercise at probably the level we did in our 20s and 30s?
So there's a couple of things around this one, really. I find this question, I do find it quite interesting. So number one, aerobic exercise will protect your heart. And so we do want that protection, particularly as women going through and maybe even postmenopause, we need that heart protection from exercise. So what we know is when you elevate the heart rate through training, that at rest, the heart becomes more efficient and your heart rate lowers. And so it's much easier for your heart to function. So it is quite important to have that aerobic capacity, yes. However, how you manage that or how you achieve that really is up to you. So it could be a HIIT training. It could be an aerobic class that lasts an hour. It could be going jogging. It could be swimming, any of those kind of activities, cycling, that kind of thing. They are going to increase that heart rate through training and protect it whilst you're at rest. So that's always a good thing. Whether you do the same thing in your 20s and 30s and then on into your 50s, well, I suppose the answer to that is if you're enjoying it and if you're capable of doing it, there's no reason why not. However, what tends to happen is that, particularly for women through that menopause age, is that because the changes in hormones are happening, then it makes it harder for the heart to work. It makes the ligaments not so binding, and so we get stiffness and joint stiffness and low back pain, that kind of thing. So it's about finding the exercise that is going to manage all that for you as you age. So as I say, if nothing changes in your body and you can still do it, then fine. But I would suggest that for many, if your body is changing through that aging process, find something that's more suitable and more appropriate for you as you get older.
Okay, that was going to be one of my questions, Laura. You've led into that quite nicely. I would say if you are one of the ones, the strong ones, who can still do HIIT and cardio with the best of them, and I take my hat off to you because I'm not one of them. My running, I did run in my 40s. My running days are well and truly over. So if we're doing that and that's sort of the main kind of exercise, I mean, there used to be sort of the thing a few years ago where it was advised that you balance a strong type of exercise with a more gentle type of exercise. Say, for example, doing a gym workout or go for a run and then sort of balance that with doing yoga, Pilates and Tai Chi. Do you need that mix? Is that still sort of in the thinking of the fitness industry?
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, it doesn't really matter what age you're at. I will always, always suggest that you have a broad range of activity and that you don't stick to the same thing every single time. Okay. So, for example, if you're in your 20s, you like going out running. And in fact, I have a few male clients like this. They've been running for a number of years. But you're only moving in that one plane. You're moving forward. And the movement of the body is always in that function, just one step in front of the other. And then they'll come to me and say, but I've got low back pain. How have I got low back pain? Well, it's potentially down to the way that you're holding yourself as you run. So if you're not doing enough stretches or enough yoga work or enough core strength with the Pilates or something else, and moving in a different way, your muscles are going to just be able to do that one thing and nothing else. So that when you bend sideways to pick something up or when you go and reach for something, all of a sudden your body's going, I don't do that. So that mix is really important throughout your life. And where we would say, yes, exercise three times a week is really good for you. Exercise three times a week, doing something different. So that might be a yoga class one day, a HIIT training class the next day, and a run on the third occasion. And so different things are going to give you different strengths. The main factor to bear in mind here is if you can move a joint, you are less likely to have any discomfort. So if you can move your spine, if you can move your pelvis, if you can move your legs, you are less likely to get discomfort through it. And so just being in one position all the time is not going to benefit that whole movement pattern.
Fabulous. Fabulous. That explains so much, to be fair, Laura. It's like, I'm probably guilty of not mix it, cross training, they used to call it. I couldn't think of the phrase before, but it's cross training, isn't it?
But, you know, it doesn't mean to say that, you know, you stop doing what you enjoy, but it's about finding that that balance between the two. And so, you know, if somebody goes out running five times a week, then I would suggest, well, can you run for three and go do something completely different for two of those days, you know? But your body also requires a rest. And if you don't have a rest day, your body's not going to repair and it won't repair stronger. So if you're exercising 7 days a week, that's not where your body wants to be. It needs that recovery time as well.
So if you are exercising 7 days a week, Laura, mm-hmm. is one day enough, or do you need to do a run of about three and then have a break?
So I would always recommend that you exercise on alternate days. But I also understand that some people might want to do 5 days a week and that's okay. But I would always recommend that you have at least one complete day of rest and that you do no exercise on it. That is where your body is going to repair itself. So this comes into nutrition now as well. And that repair, it's imperative that you have the right nutrition to repair the muscles. And when it comes to women through menopause as well, that repair, because the estrogen has dropped, it is really vital that we add protein in and bring protein powder or meal supplements from protein powder is very much the best way to go with that one.
Fabulous, fabulous. Now you touched on menopause, and I think I'm right in saying one of the lovely side effects of menopause is the pelvic floor.
Yes.
And I got told sort of multiple natural births didn't help. I've only had two, but as my nursing practitioner said to me, well, that's enough. You know, because I said, how is this, you know, sort of, you do feel it weakened, don't you? And I can remember sort of being in her office and sort of saying, but I've only had two kids. She said, well, that's enough, you know, to sort of make a difference. But the pelvic floor, I mean, we are nagged at, aren't we? I can remember after giving birth, you know, sort of the midwife sort of saying, oh, have you been doing your pelvic floor exercises? And I sort of said, oh, well, I didn't know they were non-negotiable. But anyway, that's another thing. But the pelvic floor, yes.
Oh, my goodness, pelvic floor, yes.
Give us your take on it, Laura.
Okay, how long have you got? okay, so, yes, pelvic floor becomes an issue in particular for women, but you know, I have to stress this is not purely a female issue either, but it becomes an issue for women because of menopause. So one of them contributing factors, or some of the contributing factors I should say, is having children, is smoking, being overweight, and menopause. Now, those four, if you have one or maybe even all four of them, then weakness in pelvic floor is going to happen. But the reason why it happens around menopause is because, again, that drop in estrogen. Estrogen helps your smooth muscle in your body function. Your smooth muscle is not all the muscle in the body. It is your core, which is your pelvic floor, the one around the belly called your transversus and your diaphragm. There's a set of muscles down your spine called multifidi, and they're primarily your core. But your smooth muscle also consists of your heart. So again, that function of the heart and all your smooth muscle is reduced. And so hence the reason why protecting your heart through exercise can be really, really good. Okay. So your smooth muscle is also your heart. And so it is really vital that we have that exercise to protect the heart, that cardiovascular part, but also it can support your pelvic floor and core as well. So again, Pilates is a good one because Pilates will focus on your core. I deliver Pilates classes, so I'm going to be biased towards it. However, yoga has it as well. It's called the Mula Bandha, and one of the that bandha will focus on your pelvic floor and your core as well. But essentially, using your breath is a really good way of engaging your pelvic floor. And so that's why breathing exercises can be really good. That's why Pilates is really good, because it uses your breath to connect pelvic floor and core to the exercises that you've got. And the evidence is that you can do Kegels, and that's okay, which is just literally an engagement of pelvic floor and a release. However, if you do the Kegels alongside an exercise, such as a Pilates or a yoga class, then the evidence is you get far more strength and far better function with your pelvic floor than you do with Kegels on its own. And one of the best exercises, and I'm not suggesting you do this on its own, but one of the best exercises for that is a plank. If you engage your core and you use your breath into plank, it's one of the best exercises for strengthening pelvic floor. But I would like to add just one more thing in here, and that is that I don't know whether I should say unfortunately, we have advertisements on the TV now, and they advertise products for women because of leakages and things like that. I would like to suggest to every woman out there who buys that product that exercise will benefit you, and you will no longer need to purchase that product if it's done correctly.
That's a fabulous promise, that, Laura. Yeah, fabulous. So if I could push you a little bit further on that. I mean, every woman's different and everybody's state of pelvic floor in terms of firmness and strength will be different.
Absolutely.
But just as a catch-all, what would you say? You've mentioned the Mula Bandha there and the plank. Yeah. Is what would you say to do on a weekly basis to get that strength back?
Any kind of regular exercise where you're going to focus on how to correctly engage your core and your pelvic floor together. So your pelvic floor automatically engages your core. But if your pelvis is not in a good alignment, your pelvic floor and core will be switched off. So you have to have an upright alignment of your pelvis to know you have muscle engagement. And many people will say to me, I mean, I've had many clients say, I don't know whether I'm engaging my pelvic floor or not. I can't feel a thing. I have no idea what's going on. But by the time that I've finished my sequencing with them, they definitely know that they've got muscle engagement and it's happening. And so the alignment, I have an ABC to an alignment to my Pilates class. You have to get the alignment correct, and then you add the breathing, and then you concentrate on those two as you move. And without the concentration, clearly it's going to go. It takes time, it takes effort, and it does take that concentration. But it is really important that if you want things to improve, that you have that ability to put the time and the effort into it as well. I can tell you what to do, but clearly it's then down to you to spend that time and focusing on it. But it's really important that you can do it if you wish to.
Great, fabulous. And to sort of think that with the right exercise, getting it right. Would you say, Laura, you need to work with a trainer to sort of get the alignment right?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that I do, well, not one of the things, the thing that I do with a new client every single time is look at the way that they are aligned. So I have stopped using the word posture, because as soon as I say the word posture, you can see that, you know, a room full of people already grow about 6 inches as they sit nice and tall, and they will stand tall and go, I've got good posture. So it's not about good and bad posture. It's about the ability to move. And what I mean by that is, as I said earlier on, we have a great capacity at the moment to see the next generation, or to see the generation in front of us, and how aging will affect the body. So again, not just for women, but in particular, because of menopause, women tend to have less bone density as they get older. And you will see that curvature of the upper part of the spine, again, through menopause. Well, once that starts to happen, then they lose range of movement at the shoulders and through the head and neck as well. And that's really, really important, not to lose that. So if we can get movement back into the shoulders and to lift the chest and have the shoulder blades go back and kind of squeeze together almost, if you've got that movement, you are less likely then to be stooped on a continuous basis. So we sit at a desk, or many people sit at a desk, and your head is over, your chest is over the desk, you're looking down, your head is forward of the spine. If you have the ability to lift the chest, bring the head back on top of the spine and look straight ahead, then it means you've got the movement. And so if we can keep that movement going, being in that forward position isn't the issue. The issue is, can you get back to upright? And if not, that's where we need therapy exercises to get the muscles to function better for us, lengthen on one side and strengthen on the other in order to keep that upright position. So it's about avoiding that in the first place rather than rehab. So I usually say it's prehab rather than rehab.
Fabulous. So just to sort of work with that alignment, I mean, from what you were saying there, Laura, the Pilates was going through my mind, but would yoga do the same, and maybe Tai Chi?
Yeah.
Would they all?
Absolutely. Tai Chi is lovely. The evidence for Tai Chi is that it really lowers blood pressure quite considerably. If done with the right instructors as well, things like arthritis can be improved with it. Again, all of this is about you taking time to find the right exercise and the enjoyment of it as well, so that you stick with it. And it's that sticking with it that really is so important. And as I say, you know, even if you find a class and you make friends there, and in the end you go to the class because of the friends, not because of the exercise, that's the bit that's important. But absolutely, all of these will start to develop that strength. You're moving. I always say to many of my clients who come to class, we're here and we're moving. That's the important thing. You know, whether you then have specific issues around that, that's perhaps where I might take a client on a one-to-one basis and say, right, what issues do you have? How can I help you? And what are your goals, so that we can manage that process forward? But, you know, if you don't have any issues, then, you know, why would you come to me one-to-one? Just enjoy the classes. So, yes, find the right class for you, for your needs. And if that is pelvic floor, then, yeah, yoga, Tai Chi, Pilates, they will all be beneficial for you, because you become more aware of how your body moves.
Now, you said sort of find experts in the area that you enjoy, Laura. Now, today, the day that we're recording, we've gone into the second lockdown. Yes. So obviously, at least for the next month, that's not a feasibility. Right. With online classes, I mean, that's all that we've got at the moment. But long term, if you are looking for a bit of a readjustment, is it feasible to do that online, or would you physically need to be in a class to get that assessment from a professional?
So I deliver online classes and one-to-ones, as well as face-to-face. So clearly, you know, if people are local to me and they're happy to come into the studio, we do all the social distancing and one thing and another. But by the same token, I have to get hands-on sometimes. However, for many, many people, particularly with things like low back pain, and if it's come because of ligaments now not being quite so elastic and what have you, then I can usually deal with their issues on an online basis. I've seen enough clients on a face-to-face, and I know the positions of the body. So for example, when you're standing up and you're standing quite relaxed, I try and find out the position of people's feet. And I know it's maybe a strange thing to do, but when I was in a room full of people, not any longer, I used to have a look at how people stood, and I find it quite fascinating. So very often you would assume that most people are going to have parallel feet, but they don't. Most people will actually have a V-shaped feet, but some people can have one foot out and one foot straight, and that's the bit that really interests me. And so these are the kind of questions that I can ask people online, you know, where they find their discomfort, what movements can they do. And all these kind of things tell me how they move, how they stand, so that I can then help them to correct it, and what exercise or therapy exercise they might need in order to come into a better position, or one that's not quite so discomforting then.
Fabulous. So basically, if you are in the situation where you think you need a bit of realignment, or it pays to work online with a professional, and it's no detriment really to, you know, so don't hang fire and wait for us all to be able to go flooding out to classes, you know, sort of find your expert. And in which case, listeners, you may have gathered, Laura is a professional, and she does offer classes online, and I will put details to her website and contact details. They'll be in the notes.
Thank you.
Now, sorry, go on.
I was just going to add there, actually, that in recent weeks, I've had a couple of older clients not come to class because they've had low back pain. And that is because they've not been able to move in the same way that they would normally move, out to the shops, out to meet friends, all that kind of thing. So because they're not moving, they've got back pain. And so it would be really vital, if at this point you've started to acquire some sort of discomfort and you don't know why, you don't know what's happened, is to just, I've got a free 15-minute session that people can book in and just have a chat with me if they want, and just find out what's going on and why it's going on. But it will probably be due to the lack of movement, and we haven't got that strength as we did before we came. So going into another lockdown, I think what you're saying there would be really, really quite beneficial, just to have a quick chat with somebody and make sure that you put interventions in place to avoid further discomfort or pain.
Fabulous. And to get you through the next 4 weeks, unless it's
definitely
unless it's longer, depends what Boris says.
Absolutely.
Right. We've gone into great depth on pelvic floor, Laura. And am I right, with my sort of magazine educated brain, one of the contributing factors to a weak pelvic floor is a loss of collagen?
So indirectly, yes, in a short answer. The long answer, however, because I do like a long answer. So the drop in collagen affects your ligaments. Your ligaments usually bind your bone to bone like a big ribbon through the body, but they also bind some muscle groups together as well. And so there are a few ligaments that run across your pelvis, keeping the organs in place. And so if the collagen has dropped, there's less elasticity going through those ligaments. And so, yes, that's where the drop in collagen will eventually have that effect on pelvic floor. However, if you also remember, I said that the drop in estrogen will affect the smooth muscle, which is your pelvic floor. So you've got two things going on there. And all because of that drop in estrogen. So primarily it comes from that, because estrogen, collagen is made from estrogen. And so there's a whole mix going on. And so what I can say is that you could put some collagen back into your diet with some bone broth. So what your granny used to make, putting the bones into a pot of water and boiling it all up and what have been using that as your stock for your soup, then that's going to bring the collagen out to those bones and it will help. There's also a new protein powder out, I believe, with collagen as well. And I've forgotten the name of it. And if I find it, I will let you know so you can write it in your blurb.
Yeah, in the notes.
There is one. So yes, you can bring it back into your diet. And again, obviously you can use exercise as that strengthening tool to take over from that binding of your ligaments. So yeah, exercise will really help.
Will exercise stimulate the production of collagen, or it just compensates for not having the collagen there?
Yeah, it doesn't stimulate the production. No, it just helps to strengthen the muscle that the ligaments used to support. So that if the ligaments are supporting your structure with weaker muscles, that's okay. But if you strengthen the muscles, because most people have a weak core and weak glutes, which is the ones that we sit on. So if we can strengthen those two, then that's going to compensate for that lack of tightness around the bone structure itself. So it's a compensation thing.
Okay, brilliant. Now, we're a bit mired in menopause, aren't we, at the minute, because of what we're sort of talking about and sort of the age this is aimed at. But what would you say is the best exercise to regulate hot flushes and night sweats? I mean, and will cardio and sort of high intensity exercise, will it aggravate it, or does it help? And should we all be doing yoga and Tai Chi?
Okay, that's a really good one. Okay, so I'm going to advocate aerobic and HIIT and what have you. So I'm going to explain HIIT a little bit more, because aerobic comes into this one. So HIIT training is high intensity interval training. So you do 30 seconds of work at the peak that you can, and then you've got rest. That rest time can vary. I do a HIIT program. I love it, but I do a HIIT program. And it's a 30 with 10 seconds rest. So in that time, you start to get hot and sweaty. And in that time, you will take your heart rate up, protect your heart, all that. As to hot flushes, some people may find that it makes them worse. some people may find that it makes them better. And as you said earlier on, it's really difficult because we're all so different. 25% of women will never have any kind of signs or symptoms of menopause whatsoever. And for the other 75, then there's that whole range between very little to massive effect on your life. And so where we all sit with that, and as to whether we, whether hot flushes are reduced, it's questionable. However, cruciferous vegetables, they are fabulous for hot flushes. So any kind of cabbage, I can't name them now, sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, pak choy, anything like that, and that will reduce your hot flushes. So your diet becomes quite important in terms of how you manage your signs and symptoms of menopause. So exercise will counter some of the losses that we have, loss of function of muscle and heart and all that. Your diet will then start to play its part in other kind of symptoms. So for example, as I say, cruciferous vegetables, great for hot flushes. Your omega-3 oils are great for any kind of joint discomfort. And so I was diagnosed with arthritis back in my early 40s. In fact, back in my early 40s, I didn't even know I was going through the menopause. And every time I asked, is this the menopause? They all went, oh, no, you're far too young. And I'm kind of going, but, you know, I've got all these things going on, really? I was teaching about 20 classes a week, had clients on top of that, and I couldn't get off the sofa at night. I was really sore. And so when I went and I got diagnosed, I said, there's no way I'm going on any kind of medication for this. And so my GP advised me to take linseed oil, also known as flaxseed. I have taken them ever since, and now I have absolutely no joint pain whatsoever. But it's beginning to be recognized that menopause can trigger these autoimmune conditions such as arthritis. Around about 60% of people who have arthritis are postmenopausal women. And so menopause is triggering a lot of these autoimmune conditions, but your diet can help you manage that. And so, you know, having your salmon and your oily fish, that's going to help with all that. Things like, so I mentioned earlier on about going jogging. That's not something I would advise menopausal women to go and start. If you're already doing that from a 20-year-old, that's fine, but I wouldn't advise that to go and start. And one of the reasons for it is because, as I said earlier on, you know, we kind of think, oh, I'm putting on weight, I need to exercise, I need to get fitter, so let's go up to a jogging group because it'll be, you know, fun and all that kind of thing. So with the other hormone that drops at exercise at menopause is testosterone. And testosterone is responsible for our moods. So if the mood lowers and you start to feel really quite low because of menopause, it's very possible at that point, and some people may well need it, that you go onto an antidepressant. So two things there. If you go jogging and you've got low mood, it's going to reduce your testosterone further, and so your mood will lower even further. So that's counterproductive. But the other side to that as well is that some of the medication that you could potentially be prescribed is also a contraindication to exercise. So somebody can come to me on a particular medication and I will say to them, I can't take you, because the medication you're on is going to be too, what's the right word I'm looking for, too dangerous for you to come and exercise because of what it does in the body. So it is really vital at that point that if you are on medication and you do want to exercise to help yourself manage all this, that you have somebody in front of you that can understand the impact of medication on your body and advise you accordingly. So, you know, it might be quite prudent, it might be quite common for some women to be put onto a beta blocker, which will manage blood pressure at menopause, because the weight's gone up just like that. All of a sudden you've gained 2 stone, and so is your blood pressure, and you're kind of like, how did that happen? I've never been like that before. Well, managing your blood pressure, yes, it's something that exercise can do, but if you're on medication for it, you need to understand the implications of that whilst you exercise. So it is vital that women and men who go onto this medication, when you start to exercise, you understand the implication of that medication. So it's a bit long-winded around all the signs and symptoms of menopause, but I hope that's answered it.
No, it does, and as well, it's sort of sending out a message as a message that, like you say, if you are prescribed any kind of medication that's relating to age or menopause or whatever, that whoever you choose to exercise with, make sure that they're aware of it and they're not prescribing you doing something that, as you say, fights absolutely with sort of the medication that you're on. You mentioned flax seeds there, Laura.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how useful they are for hot flushes, was it?
That's useful for arthritis. Or joint discomfort, I should say. Because you don't necessarily have to have arthritis, but joint discomfort, definitely.
Should we all be piling down to Holland and Barrett to sort of get a supplement, or should we be sticking them on our salads and in our smoothies?
So clearly, again, it depends on, if you don't have any joint discomfort, why would you, you know? So you can buy the oil itself, and my mum used to put it on a baked potato, actually, instead of butter, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's a very particular flavour. Like many things, you know, you have to enjoy it and what have you. I just find taking the capsule easier. It is about what is right for you. And as I said, I took the GP advice when she said, go and take that. And even though it's not prescribed, it was very much, I discussed it with my medical practitioner first before I started taking it. So I think above all else, if you have found an alternative way, check with your GP and just say, look, this is what I have found out. Can you tell me, is this going to be beneficial? Can I do this? And when you take any kind of medication from them and you want to exercise, ask your GP, can I exercise with this safely? You know, who will I go to? Well, they might not recommend who to go to. I don't think they're able to do that. But by the same token, you know, is just find somebody that's relevant in that respect. It's all about, have you got a sign or a symptom? Do you need to take that? And in which case, find some information about it. Go and find the evidence for it and then ask your GP if it's going to work for you.
I'm not sure I understand.
We've got a little interloper there.
Yeah, sorry.
Is that Siri joining?
Yes,
trying to join in?
Yes, it is. Sorry.
Don't worry. Some fabulous information there, Laura. And I mean, I've got tons from it, and I would imagine there'll be aspects in there that will speak to practically every woman that's listening to this, and maybe some men, who knows. But what one of the signature questions of my podcast, and it's a tad non-negotiable, and for the best of reasons, if when you started your career, Laura, be that at 16, 18, 21 or whatever, and you sort of first got into your career, what three bits, so if you could go back, what three bits of advice would you give yourself?
So that was a really good one, and I have to take some time to think about this one. Because I was going to be a Welsh teacher. I was going to teach in junior schools, and I was going to, you know, everything was mapped out and I was doing it all and I was doing it all. And then I met my husband and I ended up in Aberdeen, and I thought, there's not much call for Welsh teachers in Aberdeen, really, is there? So what I would say is literally follow your heart, because that's exactly what I did at the end, is just, I just went with it. And and also stick with it as well. I kind of, obviously, I met my husband, we had a family, and knew I didn't really want to go back to the work that I was doing beforehand, which was in retail. But I wanted to go back to work, and to a point needed to as well, because we now had one income but more mouths to feed. So it was kind of like, what will I do? And I just absolutely loved the one aerobic class that I went to. And it was that she was a physio who led it. But she said, yes, you can do it. And I've stuck with it ever since. And I think above all else, the third thing I would say is happiness is a choice, so choose to be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's like when you're in the depths, it's like I mean, the last episode was with a bit of a positivity guru, and she gave some tips out, and she was sort of saying about gratitude journaling and sort of just look at the positives, even when you're in the depths of despair. It's like, what can I actually do now? You know, what yes. one physical or mental thing can I do now, and just use that to build on it. Having said that though, Laura, I mean, they're not overnight solutions, are they? It's like exercise. It's like the commitment to keep doing it and the tenacity and
absolutely absolutely and that's where either friends or a professional or somebody that keeps you on track for as long as you need that guidance and that support is vital. And that's what I believe anyway. I mean, you know, we find partners in life and they are the ones that generally keep us going, you know, one way or another. If one is up, the other one's down, and, you know, you find that positivity between you both. You know, and if you're not with a partner, then yes, finding that positivity is very much, it can be a bit more challenging, but it is very much probably more needed than when you're with a partner. And so finding that activity, I mean, I'm clearly going to say find a physical activity, because it just makes you feel so much better. And if you manage to chat to somebody at the same time, then you've got two things, both for your mental and physical health, that's really going to help you, you know. So I always think, even if you go out for a walk on your own and just say hello to people along the street, you just feel so much better for it.
Absolutely. But I
had one thing said to me when I was about a 16-year-old. I had a Saturday job, and the lady who employed me, she would always say, if you see somebody without a smile, give them one of yours. And it's just kind of stayed with me, really, you know. And it's so important, because as soon as you smile at somebody, they'll smile back, you know.
Totally.
Lovely. So yeah,
totally. Fabulous philosophy. Thank you so much, Laura. That's
you're very welcome.
That's a very positive, endearing thought to end on. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time out to speak to me.
You're very welcome.
Absolutely chock full of good tips and advice there. Thank you so much, and I hope it helps the listeners.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Laura, and good luck with
everything. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. And yes, you know, I would love to come back. So any kind of topic that you want me to come back to, then that would be fine.
Brilliant. You may regret saying that, Laura. I may just take you up on that.
Not at all. Not at all. But thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, bye.
So there you have it. Amazing tips and advice from Laura. And my sincere thanks go to her for her wisdom, time, and for freely giving the advice. It was brilliant, and I hope there was something in there that resonated with you. If you'd like to know more about Laura or book an initial consultation with her, I'll put a link on the programme notes. So you just click on that, and that'll take you to where you need to go, and you can take it from there. Meanwhile, I'd love to connect more with my listeners on 45 Not Out. As I mentioned at the start, there's a Facebook group that I'd love you to join. You can connect with me on Twitter and Instagram, and I'd love to hear what's happening in your lives. And if there's anything you'd like us to cover, that's the place to say. Meanwhile, stay safe, well and strong as we head towards the end of this second lockdown in the UK. We're getting there. We've got vaccines on the horizon, and we begin to see light at the end of the tunnel. So all that remains for me to say is take care, stay strong, and I'll see you next time.